Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am welcoming author duo Emily Wibberly and Austin Sigmund Broca. Did I pronounce this correctly?
Nailed it.
You bet.
Oh, yay. Yeah. Okay. So Emily and Austin met and fell in love in high school. Austin went on to graduate from Harvard while Emily graduated from Princeton. Together, they are the authors of several novels about romance for teens and adults. Now married, they live in Los Angeles, where they continue to take daily inspiration from their own love story. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks
thrilled to
for
be
having
here.
Us.
And so before we start talking, seeing other people, let's get to know you and your author journey a little bit. So what initially drew you to writing?
Just loving reading. I just was reading a ton of young adult novels in high school and college. And then I was like, well, maybe you should write one. My parents are also writers, and they really were encouraging of me.
Okay.
They been an English major and I wasn't. And so then I decided to try to write young adult novels, and I would always bounce my ideas off of Austin, and I would ask feedback, and he was my first reader and editor and he brainstorm partner. And then one day I was like, well, we're basically working together. Why don't we just write the book together?
And I knew a good question when I heard one. Mom's a children's librarian, and I have always grown up loving and reading and immersing myself in stories and knowing that I wanted to do something involving writing and hopefully storytelling as a profession. I did journalism all through college and dabbled in fiction and other stuff like that. And so when Emily started that journey on her own and then eventually starting to weave me in, it felt very natural and very exciting and like a really cool opportunity to do this thing I'd always sort of wanted to do with the person who I admired most and respected most in this field in the world.
So what made you finish and publish that first novel?
We actually queried a novel before our debut, and that one we had some revise and resubmits, which is like agents were like, let's revise this and then I'll look at it again. And while we were waiting for one agent to read our revision, like she took like 4 months or so, we wrote another book because we were like, we can't just keep waiting and like, who knows what happened with this. So we wrote another book, and that ended up being our debut, Always Never Yours. And that one we queried like right before she finally was going to like read that
the
first
one.
It was chaotic. And we kind of at that point, we were like, well, Always Never Yours felt like our debut. It felt like we were really proud of it. We wanted it.
Very invested in it.
And so at that point, we were like, let's just focus on this one. And that ended up being the first book we sold.
We're kind of pathological movers on to new projects. We always want something new and to be chasing the next idea. And that's kind of how that came about.
Well, and publishing as a whole is not a fast moving like animal.
No.
Like people think it's like a book is bought and then it's like instant. Like it is a slow process.
Oh, yeah. Years.
So I assume that you are both currently still readers.
Oh, yes.
What subgenres are you diving into right now?
We try to read every, like we like almost all genres. I don't read a lot of nonfiction. That's basically it. You know, like and some are like more audiobook genres and some are more like physical book genres. So like I right now am reading, I'm so behind. I know everyone was talking about this book last year, What the River Knows by Isabel Ibáñez, and a young adult historical. And so that is like super fun. I haven't read a ton of historical, getting into that genre right now.
Yeah, I would say I'm reading more on the speculative end of romance and adult fiction. We've spent a long time in the contemporary romance space and continue to keep a foot there and read some great titles in there. We recently both read Lauren Oakey's The Best Worst Thing, which is a big favorite of ours. And we continue to keep up, of course, with our dear best friend Bridget Morrissey's books. And so we remain very devoted to and interested in keeping up with what goes on in the contemporary romance world. But we're also very, very wide in our tastes and very eager to expand. And so we're always kind of on the hunt for new stuff. And right now it's taking us in the direction of more darker, speculative, adventure-y stuff.
I mean, I like a dark book.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you just like, it fits your mood. It's just the way that it.
You need it. Some of everything. Yes.
And you haven't written in that sphere as
So
much.
it's kind of
It's,
fun to
yeah,
like
it's exciting.
read something that you haven't written.
Well, and I was talking to an author a couple years ago, and she was saying how when she's writing, she writes contemporary romance, but when she's writing, she only reads historical. She's like, because if I'm
Hard.
writing what I'm reading, then it's sometimes it'll bleed in. She's like, I never want that to
You
happen.
want a break too. If you're like spending all day at one thing and you read something, you're like, I gotta turn off. I'm not trying to like write
Right.
this as work. I'm
This
trying to
is,
like
I'm
read
still
this as fun.
invested.
Like you want it to be still be enjoyable. So when you are writing, do you plot and plan everything out, or do you pants?
We are big plotters, and I think that's part of like being a co-author is where like we need to know what we are going to do or in order to be on literally the same page. We don't want to be taking the story in two different directions. So like we will brainstorm the big ideas and the concepts and the ideas together, and then I will turn that into like somewhere between an outline and a zero draft where it's kind of got every beat, it's got dialogue, but it's got no connective tissue, no prose, no anything. And then that gets turned into more of a first draft by Austin. And then I edit that first draft. And so we kind of go back and forth after that.
So
It's an iterative
you like
process.
finish the basic like book layout before like Austin starts writing.
We finish a synopsis, which is just like beats. And then those two pieces are kind of going concurrently. I
Concurrent.
stay ahead of him by like a couple
Few
weeks.
weeks.
And then, I'm doing this zero draft, but a couple weeks ahead of him while he's turning into a first draft, and then I go back and read it. So it's like a cyclical thing.
Well, and I tell every author that I talk to during these, I love these spotlights because every author like process is different, and even like duos or co-writers, like their processes are different from everyone. Because I was actually talking to Julie Murphy and Sierra Simone, and they said they basically go in and like it's like a pasta on the floor type of thing
Oh,
because
fascinating.
it's just chaotic. Like they have no idea who the like the
Like
characters
popcorn?
are.
Like,
Well, they switch points of view,
okay.
but they have no idea what the story's going to be going into it.
Honestly, I think that would be really fun
Yeah.
and something we would be excited to try
Maybe
in
we'll
the
try it one
future.
day.
Yeah, but we have not worked that way thus far. We're much too intense about the outline and too keyed up about making sure all the pieces connect.
Well, and I've talked to a couple authors where they're like, yeah, the next book, I'm going to plan it out. And like, I have it all set. And they're like, and then I start writing and it doesn't
Whatever your
happen.
habit is, it's hard to break, whether it's outlining or not outlining.
Do you have any rituals like when you're sitting down to write? Do you like set the stage or do you just like plop on a chair and then you're good to
A
go?
music playlist that I've been listening to for like 10 years.
That's awesome.
I add songs to it. It's like long, but that kind of just like gets me in the headspace. A lot of classical, a lot of scores. That would be about it. We had a baby this year, so like all routine has kind of
It's
crumbled.
really whenever we can find the time.
Well,
He's been out.
congratulations on that. That's
Thank you.
exciting.
Very exciting,
Yes.
but definitely made all our rituals just like, when can we fit this
Squeezing it
in?
into survival
Yeah,
mode.
kids have a habit of like turning your world on its axis and then just like
Everything they
corkscrewing.
do.
And then once you get like a settle, and
And then
then
it changes.
yeah.
Yeah. I know. So
Mine are 14 and 12, and I still feel like that
still
sometimes.
upending
Still a
everything.
routine.
I fully expect that, honestly. And so I'm glad we're kind of developing a little bit of resilience for sort of
Like, keep with the
getting it done where
flow.
you
Yeah.
can.
So when you're writing, how do you create the compelling story, but also keeping your characters relatable?
I mean, I would say we start with the plot and the premise and the big picture events of where this story is going. And then we keep the characters relatable and interesting in two ways. One, when we are designing that story, we think about who is the worst or most ironic person for these events to be happening to. So there's always a sense of dynamism of the way that the interacts with the story, but that I tend to find is easier done once you know what the story is, once you know what it is, and then you can build a person who's really well suited to that story. And then second, as we go, we always try to find a piece of ourselves and the stuff we're dealing with or have dealt with to make a centerpiece of that character's emotional journey. Because everybody has so many pieces and many, experiences and things that they have dealt with. And typically, we have found in designing these characters, you just need to pick one that really becomes the resonant core of who they are. And then you kind of build that and flesh that out. Sometimes you find it as you're drafting, and that's a really exciting moment.
Yeah, our last two romances we've written, we've kind of, when we got to the end of our first draft, we were like, okay, we need to go back and like figure out more about who these people are. Like, we know how they change in terms of the plot, but like what is going on outside of the pages of the book. And so that was a piece that was the centerpiece of both revisions, where we're like trying to flesh them out. And it's really interesting to do that kind of second, because then it weaves in unexpectedly. Like, you start realizing you can change these plot points to more reflect like what you have added into their outside of the pages of the book personalities. And it's been this new journey for us that we have been kind of focusing really hard on, like figuring out multiple layers that actually get written in layers ourselves.
So is it hard to find that balance between the story and the relationship between the characters?
I would say that is what we've been
Yeah,
struggling with
it's
of
very
late.
tricky, and it often takes going back and redoing stuff. It's what we've sort of like to find once you kind of get a good idea of who a person is and what they're really dealing with, then sometimes you got to go back and be like, let me make these decisions they made or these thoughts they had be informed by that.
It would be great to know it all before you write the book, but like we haven't.
Sometimes you don't
Sometimes
have
you have to
dollars
read
right
the book to
now.
figure, and then you can go back, and it's important to do that, but it does take a lot longer.
Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
Oh man.
I mean, I think to be a little less precious with process, we used to do things in like a very routinized, like sitting together, thinking out everything at every step of the way together. And since we've developed a little bit more flexibility to kind of adapt to the efficiencies that
Yeah.
life requires.
We used to actually write our books literally together. Like, we would sit down and we would be speaking every sentence out loud, and that led to a lot of friction. We would fight about just things that did not matter at all, just at all. And it slowed us down, and
Took a
it
really
was
long time.
tiring, and it required us to like be in the same place at the same time. And like, writers retreat, you go on with other writers, you'd be like, okay, we need to like go sequester
Go
ourselves in a room
hide in
so
our
we can go
room
like
together.
whisper fight about word choice for.
It's like,
And we eventually were like, this, what if we just
this
didn't do
doesn't, we
that?
can't
And
do
we
this
developed
anymore.
this new process of, and so probably looking back, it's like, maybe we should have done that
Just
earlier,
done
and
this.
it gives us more flexibility. We don't have to work at the same time. Like, it's just better all around.
But that is the upside to continuing your craft and adapting and changing and making it better for you.
Yeah.
It just takes leaping off that change point sometimes.
Maybe it'll change again. Who
Maybe,
knows?
honestly, yeah, it will find something else better.
So let's talk Seeing Other People. It came out December 9th, 2025. This is Morgan and Sawyer's story. And a big part of this story is about grief and the grief journey and how different it is for everybody. And I really love the way that you treated it.
Thank you. Thank
Because
you.
grief in itself, like it's different for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're losing the same person or it's two different people, but it's the same like person in your life. Like everybody's journey is different and how you deal with it is different. And Morgan has had grief in her life, but not the same style of grief as Sawyer, but he is ensconced in his.
Yeah.
What was the purpose of creating that umbrella of grief in this?
I mean, to be honest, it was that came. We should have expected that that would be a larger part of the story than we did at
Okay.
the outset,
Yeah.
which was truly like we came up with the ghost pun of
Which I
seeing other
love the ghost pun.
people. I
Thank
mean, that
you.
was the start of the story. Literally,
Okay.
we ignore what a funny double meaning that was, and so we started developing this idea about these two different people with these two different relationships with these two different ghosts. And of course, as I had described previously, this was one of those instances where, as we started to develop the story, we realized that what it was really about was the differences and the difficulties of moving on, no matter who you are and how that hits you. And that was something we realized we had a lot to say about that we hadn't done in fiction yet. And so it became a process of crafting a testament to this reality that that's a different experience for everybody. We did not want it to be the same with these two different characters because that would be boring. And so consequently, we ended up in an exploration of how it hits everyone differently and is informed by the life that those people have lived before in two different ways.
Well, and we have Morgan and Sawyer's grief, but we also have Zack and Kennedy. So it's like these
Right.
multiple layers. Like there are four characters in this story that are really huge. I mean, two of them are haunting the other two,
Yes.
which I think is just such a fun way to use that like paranormal ghosty style, because it's not something that you read very often. Like
Yeah,
there's
and as we went on, like the ghosts became bigger characters than
Right.
like
And we
initially
love them more and more.
planned. It was like, oh, they have their own journeys and
Well,
that.
especially, I mean, Kennedy, yes, but especially Zach, like his journey through this book, like when you first like meet him, you're like, oh, he's just gonna be like this like dummy
Comic
surfer dude who's just like
relief.
wreaking havoc, but he's not.
Oh, yeah, but he is our favorite piece, and the characters are trying to learn who he is and they're getting to know him. But that was really our journey writing him as well. As we had our characters investigating him and getting to know him, we were getting to know him, and we knew we were heading towards something painful at the end of this book, and it was hard for us as well.
Yeah, and it really was meant to speak to the fact that sometimes the losses that hit you the hardest, or at least unexpectedly harder than you would have thought, are those that have these relationships to your life that are not necessarily like the big typically enshrined relationships. And this can kind of these blind sides can come from anywhere. And that was the story of Zach for Morgan, for hopefully readers, and certainly for us.
Well, I always like to describe grief as a wave. Like it's high, it's low, it comes in a wave. Like sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small, but it is always there. And I think that is the way that Sawyer's journey was. Like at the beginning of the book, like it is high tide, full on almost hurricane season for him. And as it goes, like it definitely pulls back, but then there's a moment that big things happen, and we're not going to spoil that. But then he like falls right back into all of it.
We'd heard that metaphor before, and needless to say, it was not absent from mind when we wrote A Ghost Who Is a Surfer.
Well, this is also true. I didn't even make that connection as I was saying it.
Intentional.
Well,
Go
no, go
on.
ahead. No, go ahead.
I've completely forgot what I was going to say, so it's
I'm sorry.
worries.
Well, in the trees, like Sawyer's front yard, it's like, I mean, maybe it wasn't intentional, but like a big metaphor for a lot of things. Because like you come up to the house, it's a mess. There's this one huge tree, which was the reasoning for him purchasing the house in the first place, but it has died. It is in decay. And there's like Morgan is like a plant whisperer. But there's a metaphor in all of that, like the way that the tree, especially when she first starts to like dig the tree up and he loses his mind.
Yeah, and I remember what I was gonna say, connected. The idea that like these connections that you form with people are the things that are heartbreaking. This is the grief is the severing of these connections. But the only way out of this grief is also forming more connections. So it's like this cycle where you're signing up for this pain again and you're doing it anyway.
The plant stuff was all Emily. This was that's exactly right. It was very intentional, and something we're really proud of is that this is a ghost story filled with life, with sunshine and the ocean and plants and California. And that's why we wanted to set it here instead of in a ramshackle Victorian mansion in Connecticut, because we wanted that resonance to be there, that there is life surrounding and on the other side of death, but they're also both in here within one another.
No, I think that's great. And I think California, like the brightness that you imagine California to be, like it definitely like plays out in the book. 'Cause how'd you put it in Connecticut? Like winter in Connecticut is not bright. I
Feels
mean,
like everything.
I'm in PA and we have more dreary days like per calendar year than most states in like the US. So it's like, I mean, I understand the dreary. So like a PA like Victorian wouldn't have worked either. There's just something about these characters. They seem so simple when you first like get into it, but they're not at all. Like they're very complex in their emotions and like the way they deal with things.
Thank you.
So, what is next for you guys?
We have our next book is part of our collaboration under a pen name that is where we write fantasy with Bridget Morrissey under the pen name E.B. Asher. And so our first book was This Will Be Fun, and we have a sequel-ish standalone spin-off called This Will Be Interesting coming out in March. But then after that, our next like romance is not announced, but it is coming next December, and it is similar to Seeing Other People. It has a speculative
Okay.
twist, a contemporary format, but this time it is time travel.
Oh,
Yeah, it's
I
very
have been seeing more time traveling popping up.
I feel like it's
It was difficult. We're pleased with our take, but it was a challenging drafting process, both like mechanically and then, as we're sort of saying, to sort of figure out how to relate that structure and that like story idea onto what these characters are dealing with emotionally.
I mean, I can imagine because the couple that I read, one, it kept like looping. It was like a loop. And I'm like, she's like, and the author is like, I'm never writing another book like
I'm like,
this.
I'm gonna lose my
Super
mind.
hard. Also, been done a lot, super
It's
well.
so hard to come up with a new way to do that. And like, they keep doing it, but we're like, we don't have a new take on
No,
that.
we don't have any
So,
say.
like,
Well, I will say, Seeing Other People was like, we've had the ghost like hauntings before, but it was definitely a fresh take because the ghosts were such a huge part of the story. Like, and I just really enjoyed the way that their story played out and the characters themselves, the growth in which like they're treated with, and they change, but they don't change at the same time.
Yes, thank you. It means a lot.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and jumping on with me to chat, Seeing Other People.
Thanks for having
Thank
us. This has
you.
been a blast.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.